Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Big college football weekend. They're all big because there just aren't enough of them. That's the reality of it. Let's talk to CBS Sports' Chip Patterson here in the program. He's brought to you by my good friends at Easton Roofing. Joe Spiker and his team, they're the ones that fixed my roof. Thought I was headed to a big re-roofing. No. They'll educate you on every possible solution. Turns out we just need a repair when it is time for that new roof, though. It is Easton Roofing, commercial, residential. They got you covered. 913-257-5426. Online at eastonroofing.com. Chip, welcome to the program. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. I hope you are.
Yeah. No complaints. We've got football, wall-to-wall football these days. So what could we possibly complain about? And we're certainly, liking what we've seen so far out of our K-State Wildcats. Let's start there. How big of a kick to the teeth do you think this is that they lose Skylar Thompson? And how much should we, maybe kick the can down the road on evaluating Chris Klieman fully as a coach? Or is it his fault if he doesn't have better at quarterback now in year three?
Huge kick to the teeth. I mean, you got kicked in the teeth, you went to your dentist after hours, and your dentist says, I can't handle this. We got to send you to the oral surgeon. This is a major kick to the teeth. This is going to be a big old hit on the insurance. We're cashing out the HSA because we saw what the Kansas State offense looks like with and without Skylar Thompson a year ago. And to think that that's what we're going to be dealing with for a significant amount of time this season, then, man, we need to hope that there's been some real improvement from Will Howard. And if there could be, I love covering college football because you really can entertain the possibilities that, hey, guess what? These 18 to 22-year-olds improve. You can get better. You can take the experience that you've had from the previous season and you can find ways to become more effective on the football field. I still think that Skylar Thompson, vastly underrated coming into the season, a very, very strong quarterback when compared to his peers in the Big 12. And so to not have him, it is a downgrade. I have no idea how to evaluate properly what the Wildcats are going to do against opponents in the middle of that conference. This is not the kind of injury that I think knocks K-State all the way down to the bottom of the conference, just because I still think that everywhere else they look like a very solid team. The defense has played well so far. We know that you've got one of the most explosive running backs in the Big 12. But if the quarterback play is repeated from what we saw a year ago, then it is going to be very tough for Kansas State to be able to. Honestly, if it's what we saw a year ago, it's going to be tough for Kansas State to make a bowl game. I would not hold that against. And then to answer the other piece of your question, I would not hold that against Chris Klieman. I think it is very unfortunate injury luck, but defensively, let's just use that side of the ball. You lose a lot of key contributors. I still think they look pretty solid there as long as they are still maintaining that level as best as they can. Again, depending on what kind of effectiveness you have at the quarterback position, then I'm not going to hold this against the coach or the coaching staff. I look at it as just a really bad break for a team that, week one, right out of the gate, had one of the most impressive performances that we saw really in the entire country.
And I want to hit our local schools and we'll get to some of the national subjects. Lance Leipold, a couple of games now to take a look at what he's been able to do. Gets the win against a 1AA school. Is down only 6 points in the third quarter against a very good Coastal Carolina team. Coastal Carolina did go on to cover. Thank you very much. I'll take the backdoor cover any way I can get it. But KU showing real fight. It's so early. He got such a late start. But is that already enough for KU fans to go ahead and maybe exhale a little bit and feel like they finally got it right this time?
I would hope that I think Kansas fans are pretty smart, and I think that they understood that the hire was a good one. And that was, why a lot of people have been looking at Lance Leipold for so long and figuring that, he was going to be able to show up somewhere, and especially if he brought in all of his own staff and sort of his support staff, not just some of the coaches, then, he would be able to create some of the growth and the success that we did see at Buffalo. I don't know if even the on-field results, and you're right, show and fight is good, but the real test about Lance Leipold is going to be when we get down into, late October, when we see for the players who are you buying into the, are you selling the present? Are you buying into the future? I think that getting this fight early is nice, but I don't think that should be enough for Kansas fans to feel like they've seen something on the field. Hopefully they came in with the expectations that there would be some fight. Again, based on the profile and the credibility assigned to Lance Leipold as a head coach. But I don't think that we can already just say, okay, you know, you got to win. You fought against a good Coastal team. That's good. Everything's good. No, we know that when you are coming in, especially in these kind of circumstances, that your locker room and your facility and sort of the mentality, the collective mentality of the, you know, 90 or so, you know, players and coaches, or I guess 120 or so players and coaches, that's going to get tested in late October, early November. What do we see out of the Jayhawks then? That is going to be probably the data point that I'm going to find more meaningful than what we have in the early season of a season that is not even a year zero. It feels like a year negative one.
Chip Patterson is with us, does a great job covering college football for CBS Sports. Chip, let's talk about the Missouri Tigers. Tough game. This is one, the Kentucky game, that I think Tiger fans thought could go either way. And if they get it, I think Tiger fans thought this team could be a 9-3 team. They didn't. There's still great optimism that they can be 8-4. You know, first of all, is this a game that opportunity was lost? Are you a believer in Kentucky? There seems to be kind of a wide range that I hear from people. Some people think this is a really good Kentucky team. Stoops has obviously done a fine job there. Other people think that this is a, you know, kind of you need to be better than this team, right? That Kentucky's just this bar that if you're going to be a successful SEC team, you should be beating Kentucky. How do you view Mizzou losing by one score to Kentucky?
Probably missed out on the chance to be third in the SEC East. I looked at this as, and you know, going on the road and doing it, it was going to be tough. I thought that Missouri in a, you know, sort of like power ranking style format, like you know that South Carolina, Vanderbilt are going to be at the bottom of the division. You know that Georgia and Florida are going to be at the top. What do you do with Missouri, Kentucky, and Tennessee? Based on everything I've seen, then I think that Missouri is, you know, a tier above Tennessee. So now we're talking about, are you the third or fourth best team? And I think that that was decided on Saturday night. And like you mentioned, very disappointing because it was a game that, you know, based on the personnel and sort of everything that was going into it, these are two very comparable teams. I don't think you can make this Kentucky team the bar as a Missouri fan just because it is so different than the kind of Kentucky team that has, you know, created the stability within the Kentucky football program under Stoops. We are not just defense and ground and pound. And granted, Chris Rodriguez was a huge part of the Wildcats' win. And the run game was an important part of the Wildcats' win against Missouri. But the idea that you've got this, you know, new passing attack led by Will Levis, it's just a different team. And, you know, I wonder if Missouri had gotten Kentucky in November instead of in September, if the result maybe isn't a little different. But I'm still readjusting what I think Kentucky is. Now, again, if you want to look at Kentucky as the bar in the SEC East, that's probably right. Because there's seven teams in the division, and Kentucky probably shows up every single season at about 3.5. And whether you beat them or not probably is going to decide whether you're third or fourth. And Kentucky got that win. I think Kentucky will get a few more wins and probably end up as the third best team in the SEC East. But if they slip, I do think that everything is still in front of Missouri to be able to go get it. I mean, let's you mentioned the record. How about that trip to Chestnut Hill to play Boston College? Looked very different without starting quarterback Phil Jurkovec in the lineup for the Eagles. That goes from being a tricky spot, maybe wow, coin flip, interested to see how Missouri plays, to that needs to be a win. Not that it's a must win for the program, but if you're talking about hitting certain win total goals, now without a quarterback, you got to go on the road and beat BC. You weren't able to do it against Kentucky. I know we're talking about a game that's a week ahead, but right. I see that as a big pivot point in the Tigers season.
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and forgive you for looking past Southeast Missouri. That's all right, because BC, I think, is circled. And it's a little stretch run. Tennessee in rebuild mode as well. North Texas also. Those are the games. Those four, Eli Drinkwitz can bank a lot of equity just by getting to 5-1 against teams that he figures to be favored against, or at least just a mild dog. We'll see what the number is against BC. But then A&M looming on the other side of things, and that'll be a different look. We're talking to Chip Patterson from CBS Sports, also one of the hosts of the Cover 3 podcast. Great podcast. If you love you some college football, make sure you check that out. USC is open. Generally speaking, when these iconic programs open up, the ripples are felt all across college football. But the last time they did it right, they didn't put any ripples in college football. They went and got an out-of-work NFL head coach in Pete Carroll. And they've tried a number of guys since then and haven't been able to get it right. First of all, how good is the USC job today? And then where should they go to find their next head coach?
Top 10 job in college football. I cannot confidently say that it is like top three or top four, but I can't get to eight without listing USC, if that makes any sense. And yeah, that is taking everything into consideration, including something that is a very unique piece of trying to handicap how this is going to go, which is that while we look at USC and all of its success and the football program and it's covered like an NFL franchise, it is still a very unique private institution with power dynamics that shift as you move apart along to different parts of the campus. And who's got the power? You know, we talk about former Cincinnati athletic director Mike Bone, who's now the athletic director at USC. Since he came from Cincinnati, since Luke Fickell is one of the top coaches in all of college football, everyone's ready to ship Luke Fickell off to USC to go meet up with his old boss. Hey, we just saw this happen. Danny White gets the Tennessee job, then he hires Josh Heupel. But I do wonder if the athletic director is the one who's going to be having the most say here. You've got university presidents, you've got boards, you've got very influential power brokers behind the scenes that are probably going to want to have their voice heard. And I have no idea which way it's going to go, because you've got to take a couple things into consideration. And the first thing that stands out to me is the calendar, because the early signing period has been one of the most impactful in a negative way to first-year head coaches, because the holding your signing class together is so difficult, especially with this situation that you've got at USC, where, yeah, they've made Dante Williams the interim because he's going to try his best to hold this signing class together. And if he does, he's one of their really, really good recruiters, by the way. And that means he's got a great connection with everyone in the locker room, which gives them a better chance of being able to not have the whole bottom fall out, at least in terms of the on-field results, now that the change has been made. I really wonder if USC is going to try to go with a coach who could get in and start putting things together right away. Because I'll tell you, like, Luke Fickell is going to be committed to that Cincinnati program through December, maybe through January. James Franklin is going to have his eyes on, you know, what's going on with Penn State through December, certainly through the early signing period. I mean, Penn State's recruiting class for the upcoming recruiting cycle ranks among like the top five in the nation. So I don't know if USC can afford to just write off an entire recruiting cycle waiting for a Luke Fickell or James Franklin. I don't know if USC can write off all the way till February waiting for Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, that said, I think that Eric Bieniemy, I think that James Franklin, and I think that Luke Fickell would all be better options than hiring Bob Stoops or Chris Peterson. But I'll tell you what, you know what Bob Stoops and Chris Peterson are? Ready to work. And you know where they're working right now? Fox Sports, which is based in Los Angeles. The ability for someone from USC to stumble over to the studio and just happen to have some conversations that could greatly influence this hire, it's very, very high. Like, it is very easy for USC to put this together. If Bob Stoops wants to do it, Bob Stoops is ready to go. You could hire Bob Stoops and you could introduce him, heck, in the first week of December, And then all of a sudden he gets to work and he does some work with Dante Williams, and they try to hold together the recruiting class. He puts together his staff after the early signing period, and their Trojans are off and running with the Hall of Fame head coach who's doing his best to be able to, you know, bring this iconic program back to glory. But I would rather have James Franklin, Luke Fickell, or Eric Bieniemy than Bob Stoops. So that's why I say that, you know, as we're sitting here now in this very early part of a process, months before a decision will likely be made, the thing that is resonating in my mind the most is the calendar, because of all of its impact on the candidates and the recruiting trail in particular.
Tell me why you take the three sitting coaches that you mentioned over Bob Stoops when Mack Brown is having the kind of success he's having at North Carolina. And I'll add on, you know, we watched Bob Huggins come to Kansas State as a basketball coach, and basically he had a year out where he was not beholden to NCAA rules. He could call anyone he wanted, whenever he wanted, and he brought in a great recruiting class to K-State. Now, he left before they all got there, but he was out on the trail basically setting up his next job. Is the smartest thing to you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge under the table, shake hands with Bob Stoops, and let Bob Stoops sit on TV on Saturdays promoting himself, promoting his brand, and meanwhile calling anyone and everyone and texting anyone and everyone that he wants to try to put together the best staff possible?
First part, I think that the phrase, the success that Mack Brown is having at North Carolina, is a lot of perception.
Okay.
And I say that from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yep.
And I say that as somebody who graduated from North Carolina. And I understand that there's a lot of success. And what he's done is he's changed attitude. He's changed the attitude of the people in the program. He's changed the attitude of the fans, the boosters. You know, he has gotten everybody on the same page, and he has welcomed everyone in a way that I think that some of these personalities and some of these characters and some of these fans felt a little more isolated with Larry Fedora. But it is all a personality thing. This is still a team that got up to number 5 in the country and then corked it against Florida State. They still lost to Virginia last year, in a position where they could have really started to string together a run at maybe being in the top 2 or top 3 in the ACC. You know, they went up to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech said they wanted to fight, and North Carolina was like, we're not really feeling it right now. Maybe next week. I tell you what, Mack Brown has been enormously successful, but if Bob Stoops or Chris Peterson has 8-4 seasons at USC, it will not be viewed as a success. Mack Brown's 7-6 and Mack Brown's 8-4 have been viewed as great successes because of intangibles and also recruiting. But there's still a step for North Carolina football to take before we look at Mack Brown as the example that can be used for retired coaches for years to come.
That's interesting, because I think part of it too is the perception of everybody going, wait a minute, you know, this isn't going to work. This guy's too old. I mean, it didn't work at Texas. Why is it going to work now? And then he exceeds those expectations. So people are forced to say, well, he's better than I thought. And therefore he gets a lot of accolades, when you make a great point. I mean, North Carolina's always kind of been considered this sleeping giant in football, near proximity to talent, great university, great academics, all the different things that come with it. And so really we should be grading it on what North Carolina's potential is, and not what our maybe way too low expectations were for Mack Brown. I think that's interesting. What about the Stoops recruiting part? Like, I mean, is that a thing that he could be out there texting, calling, you know, lining up a recruiting class? As long as he's not, hasn't officially taken the job, he could be underground working the recruiting trail?
Maybe. I mean, the USC should be fine on recruiting. USC shouldn't need Bob Stoops. Be wink, wink, nudge, nudge, texting, but not texting, you know, promote. USC should be able, like, I think that Dante Williams, is the interim coach, is a very, very, very good recruiter. And they put, after having an awful recruiting class 2 cycles ago, they had a nice bounce back here in this past year. And he got a lot of credit for some of those recruiting wins that the Trojans did have. And so I think that Bob Stoops probably is a little bit more of the not texting recruits, but at least getting back in touch with some high school football coaches, because Oklahoma recruits California, and it would be more of the networking of getting back in touch with the high school football coaches, finding out the lay of the land, who are the important, you know, 7-on-7 coaches, who are, you know, just, it would be more information gathering and establishing relationships and networking among other adults. And I think, I mean, if Bob Stoops texts you and you're 17 years old, does it mean anything?
Yeah, that's a problem. I
mean, he won a national championship 21 years ago. An entire lifespan of recruits has passed since he won a national championship.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective on it. We forget how long it has been since he won that championship. The Big 12, we're talking to Chip Patterson from CBS. The Big 12 has expanded, grabbed four teams. Did they get it right in expanding now? And do you like the four teams that they got? And should they be done at 12, or should they be looking at Boise and other San Diego State and getting to 16?
So I'm going to lean very heavily on my colleague Dennis Dodd here, because I do think it's probably more valuable for me to share my insight on how I think this is going to play than whether or not I got it right, because I'll tell you what, they don't care. The conference commissioners do not care about whether old Chip Patterson thinks that they got it right or not, but they did. I mean, these were the top candidates in 2016 when they explored expansion. Everyone said that these are the schools at the top of the list, and they just went right back to them, and they ran it back. It did not come as a surprise. They seem like great options. And the example that I've been using for the Big 12 is that you're looking at this almost like an investment firm or like venture capitalist, where you're saying to UCF, to Cincinnati, to Houston, and to BYU, we think that by association with us, and by our investment in you, you can only get even better. So Cincinnati, if you've become a top 10, top 15 program, we think we can get you up into being a regular top 10 program. UCF, you know, you're about top 20, top 30 program. You've got that great season 4 years ago. But even in the Josh Heupel era, we're still talking about consistent winning, competing for a conference championship. We think that you can get even better. Same for Houston, same for BYU. And in that case, you look at each of them and you're like, man, I understand why the school said yes. I understand why the Big 12 reached out and tapped them. Now, are they done? And that's where I go back to Dennis Dodd. Dennis thinks no. The timeline has it such that I think Texas and Oklahoma will still be around for at least 1 year. I mean, the contracts, buyouts, all these things could change. But the Big 12 could find itself at 14 for at least a season, the way I understand it. And then when Texas and Oklahoma leave, then the Big 12 might have Texas and Oklahoma replacements lined up. Who would that be? You mentioned Boise State with all the football success. That has to be one that you entertain. I think Memphis is another one that you look at. And maybe Memphis makes even more sense than Boise State, though Boise State would be a great travel partner. Not to mention a regional rival for BYU, but the idea being that when we get into this new college football era in the 2026 season or 2027, the Big 12 has gotten to 14 with two more beyond this four as Texas and Oklahoma replacements. And then, you know, as much as we laugh about this Big 12 that's had 10 teams, it'll finally get 12, then it's going to be at 14. But 14 is the number in the ACC. 14 is the number in the Big Ten. 14 is the number in the SEC. So, you know, again, that is his thought. He said it on the Cover 3 podcast that he believes the Big 12 is not done and that 14 might be the number. And I guess I understand it if from a strength and numbers perspective, if nothing else.
Yeah, Boise State, Memphis, San Diego State to me is another program. You know, the SEC is at 14, but going to 16 with Texas and Oklahoma right. When they get there. I think there's strength in numbers because if you lose schools, your conference is still, you know, it's better to be filling out 15 and 16 than it is, oh, my God, we just lost two to the Pac-12. Now, the lower your number, the more vulnerable you are. So that's my thoughts. And like you said, none of these conference commissioners care what I think. Is it possible with this group that they would be at 12 that they're actually a better football conference than the Pac-12?
No, I don't think so. The Pac-12 is in pretty good position right now. I mean, UCLA is moving in the right direction. Arizona State has a lot of scandal, but on field, we'll see what happens in this BYU game. In general, their roster has been built out in a way that I think is sustainable. USC, while they are making a change, we're still talking about a team that, you know, was 5-0 in the regular season last year, playing for a Pac-12 title on conference championship Saturday. Washington has gotten off to an awful start, but I think, again, the infrastructure there is kind of built up. So I would still give the Pac-12 a like slight edge over a Big 12 that, as I look at it right now, so like just through 2 weeks of the college football season, the SEC, I have power rated as the number one conference in college football. I've got the Big 10 power rated second. I've got the Big 12 third, a notch ahead above the ACC and the Pac-12, who kind of, depending on what numbers you're using, or it's just sort of one or the other. But then you take Texas and Oklahoma from the Big 12, I think that that's where it drops. Now, does the addition of those schools, as you mentioned, I think that it puts them more on the same level. Like if we were to just take those schools, put them in the Big 12, take Texas and Oklahoma out, I think it drops them from solo third to a three-way tie for third, or a three-way tie for fifth, depending on which way you want to look at it. But I would still say that you're falling back into that, like you're on the same level as the Pac-12 and the ACC, as opposed to, at least as we're looking at right now in this season, they are more of a solo third, about a notch ahead of those two other conferences.
We're talking to Chip Patterson from CBS. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System has extended weekday hours and a Saturday morning walk-in clinic. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. We'll move quickly, Chip. Just tell me, who's the Heisman winner this year?
Crap. I had JT Daniels. I had Bijan Robinson. At this point in the season, shoot, I would take a flyer on Matt Corral. How about that? Let Ole Miss beat Alabama and then put that with all the statistics. I mean, beating Alabama and putting up a bunch of crazy statistics with the Johnny Manziel formula to winning the Heisman Trophy. I'll pick Matt Corral.
I like it. I like it. All right. What's your national championship game? Who beats who?
Well, it was Ohio State against Oklahoma. And I'll tell you, I don't feel as good about that, given everything that I've seen so far through 2 weeks of college football. So I'll go back to the inevitability. I'll go Alabama over Oklahoma.
Bama over OU. I like it. All right. Do the 12 teams that are scheduled to be in the Big 12 actually get on the field as a conference? Basically, I'm saying, does a Kansas or an Iowa State or Oklahoma State get robbed before those 12 actually get together and form a conference? Yes or no?
Hey, I don't understand the question.
So I'm saying, like, they've added the four, but they're not actually going to play, right, for a few years, 3 years, roughly 2 years maybe. Do they actually ever come together, or does an OU or an Oklahoma State or Iowa State or any of the current, you know, Big 12 teams get poached before they ever bring this league together the way it's formed right now?
No, I think that the moves have been made. We're pretty much set on a path. I don't see any further poaching.
Okay. All right. And finally, does Eli Drinkwitz leave Missouri on his terms, whether that's retiring after a hugely successful career or taking another job? Basically, he doesn't get fired. However it ends on his terms.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, good news. Good news.
He's great in an interview.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, he is.
I'm just saying, I think he's great in interviews. He's incredibly smart. And he seems like someone who, if it does seem to be going south, he's more likely to do a Dana Holgorsen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. It does.
If he starts to get a whiff that things aren't looking good, he's too well connected and well liked within that industry to not be able to have some options to make a sidestep, unless, of course, there's an awesome buyout that he wants to cash. But I'll say he does.
Chip, great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate the time. Thanks so much. And we'll be reading your work at CBS Sports and, of course, listening to the Cover 3 podcast, man. Have a great weekend.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
The Program with Soren Petro.
You will not like me, but the more you hate me, the more you will learn.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer. Tyreek Hill, 10 touchdowns, of
like
75 yards or more in his career. He was a rookie in 2016. Who was second on that list? 75-yard touchdowns since 2016.
Is there like, is it like, somehow it's like Mecole Hardman, like in a shadow now?
Nope.
Julio Jones?
Mm,
no, he doesn't score enough touchdowns. I retract the Julio Jones guess.
There
is me thinking out loud.
I will tell you, it is a wide receiver.
Okay.
And I gave you a decent hint. You guessed Julio Jones once, and I said, you got the right first two letters. Of the first name, not the last name.
Yeah, let's see here. What am I missing? I got the right, the last name?
No, the first name starts with J-U.
Okay. I'm going to need more.
The next letter, two letters, are also J-U.
Juju Smith-Schuster?
That's pretty good. Juju Smith-Schuster has 5.
Wow. Okay.
Two players have 4. One's a running back. The other is a wide receiver, but is
Christian McCaffrey? A running back? No.
Derrick Henry has
Derrick
4.
Derrick Henry. Oh, wow. Okay.
And Cordarrelle Patterson also has 4.
It's Cordarrelle.
Oh, that was Cordarrelle.
I don't know.
Anyway.
I say Cordarrelle, so that's what I'm going
with. About
that,
Tyreek Hill has 10. The next two players, whether you want to choose Henry or Patterson to be the second guy, the next two players on the list have 9.
That's amazing. Does that not speak to how... Now, how much of that is him? How much of it is Patrick Mahomes?
I would say at least 50% of that. That's hard to say. I'm trying to see how many he had when Alex Smith was quarterback. He did have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. He had, how many of these were?
Smith was through 17. But didn't he have some kick and punt returns out of that long?
Yeah.
That would be.
He did have 2 75-yard or longer touchdown catches from Alex Smith in 2017.
How many kick and punts?
Let me see. I'll just sequence it.
17, he was kind of bursting onto the scene and people not really knowing what he wanted.
See, kickoff, punt. There's 4 right there. Punt, there's 5. I think that's all because he hadn't had a special teams score.
So 3 with Mahomes.
Yeah.
2 with Smith and then 5 in the special teams in the kick and punt.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
He's an amazing player. That's what that stat, that amazing stat, leads you to believe he's an amazing player.
There's a video. I probably shown it to you, and I'll find it on my phone. And
I don't think we want to talk about that on the air, do we?
It's him on a box. He jumps down off the box, lands one jump or one step, and then jumps up on another box. It's, 3 feet in here. You see it, and you're like, wait, that's you can't do that. That's freaking impossible. I've watched it 50 times, and I'm still like, I don't know how he did that.
It's the kind of workout you and I do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. We just literally bounce, though.
Yeah.
It's a different approach to things. No, I think it is an amazing question. I think we know that Tyreek Hill is tremendous because he was tremendous with Alex Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know he's a great player. I think, I've said this many, many times in other towns. I don't know how I've said it a few times here. But the fact that the Chiefs went out and got Patrick Mahomes, but then made sure that he had every weapon possible to make sure that he could see what his full potential was. Like, you never sit around and be like, oh, I wonder, could he drop back and throw for 5,000? Yeah, we already know that. Is 50 touchdowns? No. If we get him the weapons, he'll do it. Right?
Yeah.
And so I do think that's a big...
A big part of
their team building was get the quarterback and get him as good as possible. Then we'll figure out the rest around him.
And there's a chorus who I see on Twitter routinely this time of year, comparing when you compare him to other guys, well, who couldn't succeed? He got the best wide receiver, the best tight end, Andy Reid, blah, blah, blah. Well, Alex Smith had Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and he lost at home in the first round to the Titans. And Patrick Mahomes has been to a conference championship and two Super Bowls and won it. He's what? So that'd make him 1-1, 3-5, 4-1, 6-2 in the postseason. I think it is a little bit about Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And, you know, we're going to talk to Glenn Clark on the Central Bank of the Midwest pregame show this weekend. But, you know, about Lamar Jackson and where they are with Lamar Jackson. I've got a buddy who is from Baltimore, and he is upset that Lamar Jackson doesn't get the same kind of treatment that Patrick Mahomes gets. And his brother-in-law, who lives here in town, is like, because they're not the same. One of them's been to three straight AFC championship games and two straight Super Bowls, winning one of them. The other one has a win.
A postseason win.
A win. A.
A.
Singular win.
There's a large difference. And we kind of discussed this a bit on Wednesday. It isn't just that he makes the plays that make SportsCenter. It's that he also wins postseason games and wins at least one ring and was one game away from a second. You don't usually see the combination of jaw-dropping stuff and success.
Yeah, Mike Sandow.
Not that level, at least.
Mike Sandow wrote a piece. He's ducking Jed. He never got back to you?
No.
I'm gonna get after him.
I mean, he could have been traveling in theory, but
it doesn't matter. The program reached out.
But, you know, he could also be a coward.
When the program reaches out, I mean, you respond.
Well.
Especially if you've had coronas with me at the Super Bowl, then you respond.
It all worked out in the end. We had a nice conversation with Chip Patterson. He's a good man.
I'm a huge Chip fan. I want to get to a couple things he said here in a second. He's always fun to talk to. But he had a thing saying, it was basically a get off Baker Mayfield's back column. But, of course, you know, if you're a Chiefs fan, you're like, whoa, wait a minute. And his point was, like, Baker Mayfield didn't blow the game because he didn't score that touchdown. And he pulled the math on however far Mayfield had. I think he had to go 83 yards because he said, okay, we pulled 80 to 86-yard drives with just, like, I think, just past the two-minute warning. Right? Wasn't he past the two-minute warning? He had the two.
Yeah.
I mean, he still had it. When I say past, I meant he still had it to use.
That drive began at the 17 with 2:49 left.
Okay. And so he basically pulled that scenario, and it was 80 to 86. And he said, well, let's see how guys have done in that scenario. And there was no direct correlation that the greats get it done. It was like, you know, I think somebody was 0 for 3 and somebody else was 1 for 1, but another, you know, a good guy was 0 for 1. Several good guys were 0 for 1. Then there are a bunch of humps that were 1 for 1. And he's like, it's just completely random. I'm like, I think you threaded a needle. That's what I wanted to get him on and ask. And maybe he knew it. Well, Kansas City's calling. They want to know, like, how Mahomes fits into this thing. Like, I think he threaded a needle. Like, okay, so maybe Mahomes hasn't gone from 80 to 86, but he's got four from 78, 79, 80. You know, or 78, 79, 76.
If you block
and an
them
87
all out.
And 80. Yeah. Like, let's just talk about late game drives.
Yeah.
Where you have to get seven. That was the point. Where you have to get seven. And he is freaking money.
You're like asking how many 99-yard touchdown, you know, drives does some team have?
Yeah.
You really, the number is so low that the separation is somewhat insignificant.
Yeah, I just, you know, it's
he is. It is amazing. And every team you watch, it's in one of those spots. You're like, what? Mahomes would get points.
And I'll tell you what's different about him is he goes down the field.
Yep.
Right?
His third down, the way he goes downfield, I think you talked to Seth Kaiser about this either last week or the week before, about just the average distance of his downfield throws on third and long.
Yeah.
He just does things because you're going to get in those spots, particularly when the defense knows you got to pass. But
he is the answer to every football fan's prayer on third down: throw the ball past the sticks.
Yeah,
And you're like, how many times have we been like, listen, I know you want him to throw past the sticks, but sometimes they drop the coverage. And so throwing underneath 4 or 5 yards short and letting the guy catch and run it, that's actually a good play. How many times have we had to have that discussion in this town that, yes, I would like him to throw past the sticks, but maybe no one's open past the sticks. Patrick Mahomes now has taken every football fan for the last 20 years and been like, see, I told you,
yes.
Throw it past the sticks.
And there's a little bit of I mean, the fact that he's got two guys in Hill and Kelsey who can get open, but even if other quarterbacks had guys who could find their way to get open past the sticks, even against that kind of coverage designed to stop that, other quarterbacks, one, can't maneuver to themselves to the part of the field where they can avoid the rush and deliver that throw, and no one else has a kind of arm that can get it there. All Tyreek Hill or Travis Kelsey has to do is just give him a little bit of spot, a little bit of space.
Yeah.
And that's a lot easier to get downfield than 5 yards of separation. They don't need much, and he can get the ball there in time. So it's a combination, a little bit of who he's throwing to, but most of it, it's 80% of it is Patrick Mahomes' right arm.
Yeah, it's all factors, but he's the biggest one.
Yes.
And I do think that, again, like when they have to have it to win a game, because you don't go for it on fourth down necessarily when you – when it's at the end of the half. You might, if you're in kind of no man's land between a long field goal and not enough time for them, then okay, fourth down, 11 seconds to go, let's take a shot, see if we can get closer or whatever. But at the end of the game, you go for it on fourth down, and he's unstoppable.
Yep.
It's why if Andy Reid would embrace the fourth down all game, yeah, he might give up an extra 3, an extra 6, an extra 7, maybe an extra 10. But I guarantee you he would get more points going his way. They face fourth and 11s and he gets it, right? Fourth and 15 against the Ravens, he gets it.
That's what made the fourth and 2 field goal at the 10-yard line Sunday so perplexing. One, in any circumstance, I feel good about Patrick Mahomes making the first down. And two, the other team took the opening kickoff in your place and went down the field, punched it in, and got 2. They sent a message, we're here, we're not scared. And in the first moment where they had a situation like that, I won't say Andy Reid folded, but he didn't.
He played conservative.
Yeah. And I thought, if there's a spot to go for it on fourth and 2 at the 10-yard line, it's with Patrick Mahomes, a quarterback, after the other teams just put 8 on you.
In some ways, he played conservative knowing he had an ace in the hole, though.
Yes,
like, there is
true.
That element.
We're
like,
be
I
down
don't
here
have
before.
To be aggressive.
We're going to be down here again.
Yeah, because I have the guy.
And in the end, they put 33 on the board, and they won. So.
Yeah. Yep. All right. We'll take a break. 913-3-810-810. You're in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Tear the pants off me. Guess I better put my pants back on.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
We're back here in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Hello.
You asked me to do something 2 seconds before we went to air.
Hello.
Is this thing on? 913-3-810-810. I think John wants to get excited about Aiden Shaw signing with Mizzou. Is that what I'm going to guess here? John, you're in the program. What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, I really think that Aiden Shaw is a fantastic recruit. I saw him a little bit at Blue Valley, and I think he's, you know, up there. This is probably one of the better recruits, probably since Jeremiah Tillman, but I think he fits better with today's system of basketball versus Jeremiah Tillman, who is kind of like an old school kind of basketball player from that standpoint. So, you know, like he's more of a Doug Smith kind of basketball player, Jeremiah Tillman is. Or is this guy's more of a physical presence within the lane? And I think Konzo Martin needs this kind of recruit to kind of bolt himself, potentially getting back in the NCAA tournament. And not only that, winning some NCAA tournament games, because I think that's been lacking in Konzo's time at the University of Missouri.
Yeah, I think most Missouri fans, and thank you for the call, John, would agree with you that it's lacking.
He is the highest recruit that Konzo's had since Tillman, but Tillman was in the top 20. This kid's 53, which tells you how bare the cupboard has been since 17.
It should be pointed out that Mark Mitchell is a top 20 recruit, formerly of Bishop Miege, now going to Sunrise Christian. and he is Mizzou is one of the front runners for him. If he lands Mark Mitchell and Aiden Shaw,
nice haul.
That's a nice haul. That's the kind of class that gets people going, okay, we're not looking for your job anymore. Congrats to Mizzou.
It's the Jazz End of the Hour Question on the Half Show. Sponsored by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.
Laissez le bon temps rouler.
All right, only two Chiefs quarterbacks have ever lost a game in Baltimore. Name either one. Brought to you by Jazz, a Louisiana kitchen.